What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golliver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina of Sports Illustrated. Michael, I saw somebody tweet last night, the only game that mattered was Utah Jazz versus the Philadelphia 76ers. I believe that was you. It was also the only game that probably mattered to the league office because, oh my God, the Utah Jazz were freaking out after that game, whether it was Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. The list of complaints goes on and on and on about the officiating. And I will note, they're not the only team lately that has been complaining about the officials. Montrezl Harrell of the Lakers got into a little scrap the other night during a loss to the Sacramento Kings, upset because he was called for a technical foul for shouting "and one." I'm not sure if everybody's patience is just fraying here as we reach this All-Star break, but the nature of the comments from the Utah Jazz really caught my eye. They're playing the "we're the small market team" card. They're playing the "we get no respect" card. We're saying Mike Conley's never gotten a technical foul in his entire career. Why doesn't he get any positive treatment from the officials? They were really losing their minds. So just first things first, Michael, because I know you had a careful eye on that game. Did they get jobbed? Did they have a argument in this one, or did they simply just get steamrolled by Joel Embiid?
I do not think that they got jobbed. I think that I just want to start by saying I hate conversations about refereeing and whistles and conspiracy theories.
Well, Michael, last night, it would have been nice if you told me that before we started the show. Come on.
No, let's go. I'm here for it. Last night's game was super fun, and it went down to the last possession in regulation. I think there were missed calls on both sides. I know that Utah lost the game, so they are the ones who were super upset afterwards. But I didn't think it was a particularly well officiated game for either team. And I actually rewatched the fourth quarter, or the final 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, right before we started taping. Because I just wanted to kind of refresh my memory there, and the whistles weren't good. It was not the greatest officiated game, but like to say that Rudy Gobert's rant was very intense, invoking the small market conspiracy theories that teams like Utah or Indiana or Portland or Oklahoma City, they don't get the same whistle as the glamour markets, and I just didn't see that at all. There's no evidence of that. I mean,
well, the Jazz fans are going to yell at you, Michael, and they're going to say, come on, what about that Donovan Mitchell foul where his arms wrapped up with Ben Simmons? How is that possibly an offensive foul? It seemed like that might have been the trigger play that really set everybody off. Did you see that one as one of your missed calls in your Michael Pina last 2 minutes review? I mean, did they get that one wrong?
No, that was bad. Rudy was called for a foul when Shake Milton just dove over Dwight Howard's back and he landed really hard and they called a foul on Rudy there. I didn't think that was a foul. Conley and Donovan Mitchell were poked a few times on drives and shots in the paint late in that game. Like, you could have called fouls on all those, but there was a minute to go and Embiid caught Rudy Gobert in the air on a deep post up and he drew contact on the shot and there was no whistle and it was like an absolute clear foul. And so plays like that, it happens to both teams. I see where Utah is frustrated, and they have a right to be because they didn't get some of the calls that they would have liked, but it honestly, I could say this still in blue in the face. It goes both ways. I have a theory that and a belief that it all balances out in the end, so I just ignore officiating, and it makes NBA basketball so much more enjoyable. And to get super pissed off in a early March regular season game, I don't understand it.
Michael, I'm concerned that we might look back on this game when we get to the playoffs, right? Because it is setting up as small market David versus large market Goliaths, right? I mean, if the Utah Jazz are actually going to win the title, they're probably going to have to go through two of the three of the, LA Clippers, LA Lakers, and Brooklyn Nets, right? They might have to go through all three of them. I think that NBA history would say that's a tall order just based on their lack of like major big time superstar level player. Those guys, you know, I think everybody talks about superstar treatment in the playoffs, but I do think, you know, part of being the very best player is being able to, drive the action of the games at the peak key moments. We saw it during last year's finals, LeBron's getting the free throw line regularly when everything else is breaking down for the Lakers. That's always going to lead to sort of, hurt feelings on the other side. I guess my question for you is, was this a calculated move by the Jazz to start laying some groundwork for the future? Or is this going to blow up in their face? Are they going to be seen as like the small market whiners? And if they get to the playoffs, everyone's going to say, oh, remember back in that Philly game, they couldn't just take their loss. Oh, they're just always griping. They deserve to lose because of their attitude. Like, is there some blowback potential here? Because this was very coordinated. I mean, as you mentioned, Rudy Gobert wrote an essay. I mean, he was out there for a while talking and hitting some of the same themes. I do think if he had an editor, they probably would have cut him down. I understand that's a problem for me as well. I get long-winded, so that's totally understandable. Mm-hmm. But similar deal for... Oh, yeah.
What? You? Yeah. Long-winded? No, stop.
But similar deal for Donovan Mitchell as well. I think that he was going on at length, too. So what do you think, Mike? Oh, I mean, this could be a real problem.
Look, I have a lot of respect for Rudy Gobert. Incredible player, incredible defender. Like, Joel Embiid had 40 points, 19 rebounds. He shot over 50% from the floor. Not the game where you want to be like complaining about the refs. Like, it's not. He got absolutely dominated last night, and that is why his team lost. That's straight up what it is.
So that seems like it could be a playoff preview, is what you're saying. If LeBron goes for 35 and 15, we better not hear tears. Is that what you're implying?
I don't know if you watched the game, but like those two were on an island for a lot of like many, many possessions, and Embiid just sort of had his way with one of the best defenders of his generation. And Embiid treated that game, it looked like he was treating it personal. I mean, afterwards, he called out a media member for doubting his intensity against some of the better centers in the league, and he basically said, this is what I do to the best centers in the league. And he was right. He was incredible. That's why he's one of the top MVP candidates. So I just think generally when you get, like, if you want to complain about the refs, maybe don't, you know, get dump trucked on a post up and fall over, or fall for a pump fake in the mid post and give up a blow by for an open dunk, as Rudy Gobert did in the fourth quarter, on back to back possessions. Like, just be better. That's my thing. Like, you have to look internally sometimes, and you can't just blame it on the refs, who were, they were bad both ways. They were. I have like half a dozen examples of bad calls, or really good calls that were really hard to make on the Sixers. That kind of refute this idea that they were there was this conspiracy in favor of Philadelphia. Just it doesn't add up.
Yeah, you use that phrase, be better. I think that Rudy Gobert said something along the lines in his comments, we don't just have to be better, we have to be elite, because we've got to overcome the treatment of this small market. I don't know. It could be a harmful mentality. It could go either way, Michael. I grew up with these Rip City Blazers from the early 1990s, and their whole mantra was sort of us against the world, right? We're in this foxhole together. Nobody believes in us. They're trying to go into the finals against Michael Jordan and shock the world. And I think that's kind of a classic rallying cry. But I do think that these guys really seem to deeply believe it. I mean, that was some passionate post-game press conferences from them, right? And I think if you get into that mentality where you're, feeling like a persecution complex, I'm not sure that's entirely healthy. And once you get there, it's very hard to back away from that ledge and just be like, oh, my bad. I was just caught up in the moment. I don't really believe there's a giant conspiracy against our organization in favor of all the big market superstars. Hard to walk that one back. So I think from the league office's perspective, there needs to be stiff fines. You can't have these kinds of conversations floated out by prominent players, especially all-stars. I do think they should probably have some level of dialogue with the Utah Jazz on this issue and just be like, all right, guys, so, you know, we understand that you're very upset, like, make your case, you know, similar to like what the Houston Rockets did a few years ago when they were presenting all these reports and whatever else. You hear them out so they feel listened, right? But that's really all you can do. I don't believe that they're necessarily being picked on or targeted in this situation, although some of those calls, as Jazz fans will rightly point out, were just absolutely egregious. Here's my other theory, Michael. I'm just in psychological mode today. Is it possible that the Jazz have been hearing everybody doubting them for the last 2 weeks? There's been a real counter narrative, right? Okay, well, obviously the Jazz are the best record in the league, but they're not going to be a playoff team. They're peaking too early. They don't have the right matchups for these big market teams. Is it possible that the Jazz were kind of on the defensive, starting to get sick of this narrative pushback? They drop a couple games here before the All-Star break. They start to lose some of that free spirit, that momentum that was carrying them throughout February. And now they're like kind of just getting down in the dumps a little bit about it, and they're lashing out, just annoyed that everybody's nitpicking what's been a phenomenal season for them so far. Is that possible?
I don't know. I don't think so. I know you want to be Mr. Armchair Psychologist right now with the Utah Jazz, Ben, and I'm here for it. For sure.
Well, I'm just seeing a direct link between like, oh, we're being treated like the small market team versus we're being treated by the media as the team that doesn't have that prominent superstar. We don't have a guy in the MVP conversation, right? We didn't get Mike Conley on the All-Star team. There's just a little bit of that chip on the shoulder edge that's very easy to take from one conversation and then just translate it into the next one in sharp ways.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I have a quick stat for you, or just I guess notable fact question, and I'm going to present it to you in a question, Ben. Where do you think the Utah Jazz rank in shooting fouls committed per 100 possessions this season?
Shooting fouls committed. Wow, very interesting question. I have absolutely no clue, but it's a leading question, so I'm going to say they're in the bottom 10.
They are dead last.
Wow.
They are 30th out of 30.
So they
teams.
Get called for fewer fouls than any other team in the league?
Correct.
This is a small market bias, Michael. Well, do you think that has to do with their play style in terms of the way that their defense functions?
Yeah, 100%. That strategy for sure has something to do with it. It speaks to Gobert's brilliance, but like just... like, even if you're funneling ball handlers towards him and staying home in the three-point line, which is what they do, and you keep your hands up so that you don't get called for fouls, like, I don't know. I just think that's interesting
to
me.
Let me go the other way, Michael. What if they're just foul geniuses? You know how sometimes LeBron will get annoyed at the officials and he'll just like kind of pull them aside and give them like a 5-minute lecture about basketball? And a lot of times they're just nodding their heads because, let's just be honest, LeBron's the smartest person when it comes to the sport that there is. And you know, any mortal is going to have something to learn from him if he's going on like that. And that kind of, you know, that takes place regularly during playoff games. Is it possible that the Jazz are in that same category, that they've mastered how fouls should be called and the refs just aren't on their level, Michael?
I was watching last night's game, and I don't think that that's the case. I don't think they're as good as LeBron. No, unfortunately.
Well, here's my okay. Let's be all in all seriousness. How should the NBA respond? I gave you my idea. Fine, increase conversation. Let's all try to move forward. Do they just give them a pass, Michael, because it's, All-Star weekend, everybody's kind of exhausted and frayed? I listened to, broadcasters from probably 3 or 4 different games last night all talk about how their head coach or one of the key players was so looking forward to the All-Star break. They couldn't wait to get away because their nerves were kind of shot. They were a little bit fried and exhausted after 2-plus months straight of basketball. Do you just give them a pass? Is this a situation where Adam Silver pulls out the Santa Claus card and he's like, just like he said to James Harden back in December, Christmas is coming up. I'm not going to fine him too bad, and just try to go light on it. Is that how you would handle it?
No, I mean, you can't let some of those comments go. You just, like, Donovan Mitchell saying that his team, like, literally was screwed by the refs. That's, like, a direct quote. You can't let that go. If you're the NBA, that's just if you were to let that go and ignore it, it's like it's an extremely slippery slope. I think refereeing and officiating is one of the more sensitive topics that the league office is about, because if there is no integrity with the referee's whistle, given how impactful and influential the refs are in basketball, then what are we even doing here? So like, why would I even watch an NBA game if I knew that one team had this completely unfair advantage? So, I mean, that goes back for like 20, 30, 40 years. But, like, no, so I think that they will be fined for sure. I would be shocked if they weren't, if Gobert was not fined, if Donovan Mitchell was not fined. And real quick, before we move on from this topic, I just want to point out before we, I know that, you know, we've been a little bit harsh on the refs. I forget if I've ever mentioned this on the pod before, but I've been reporting a story on mental health throughout this entire season. And one element of that story that I don't think a lot of people pay attention to, or that topic that people aren't paying attention to, is just the impact that this season is having on referees. And referees are going through the exact same really strict protocols that the players are, that the coaches are, and, you know, referees are people too. And so I feel like the shortness that that referees are feeling right now as we head into the All-Star break might be contributed to just their own, you know, I'm the armchair quarterback.
Well, no, what you're saying is maybe Devin Booker got ejected for basically like looking the wrong direction and bouncing the ball a little bit hard. Yeah. Might have been a quick trigger there because they're on edge as well. I would agree with that 100%. And here's my contrast for you, Michael. Maybe this would be helpful for your article. I talked to some of the referees when they were in the bubble, and I was like, God, you know, this must be so weird. You know, it just kind of like everybody in the bubble would talk about. And the referees, mm-hmm. first of all, they griped about not getting their miles and points, which I love because, you know, anybody who travels, it's always about the miles and points. But they made the counter argument, which was, look, like, it's not great being away from our families, but we log so many miles over the course of a season. We're always in one city to the next. It's very difficult to have stabilized routines. It's hard to get consistent time at home during the season. You're constantly changing time zone, which disrupts your sleep. You're under an enormous amount of pressure. You're staying up late to do the post-game reviews. And here in the bubble, mm-hmm. we have absolutely no trouble whatsoever. If we want to sit by the pool and smoke cigars for 2 months straight, we can do that. And guess what? Some of the referees did that. If we want to just hang out on our off days and get a suntan in the humid or Orlando climate, well, we can do that as well. They actually seem pretty darn happy. They're playing pickleball nonstop. They've got their workout routines really built into their days. They adapted to the lack of travel very quickly, and they all seem to be pretty, pretty happy about it. Now, of course, they miss their families, no question about it. But all things considered, there were some real positive trade-offs for them in the bubble. Now, when you're looking at not only going back into society where you've got to travel commercial, right? You know, getting from city to city and deal with all the stress with there. You're going through the testing program. You're dealing with the other rules like you're describing. You're also away from your family, and you're being forced, you know, because the schedule is condensed, to probably even work a heavier load or at least have fewer off days because of the travel requirements. I mean, this has got to be the season from hell for the referees.
100%. And you didn't even mention specifically the isolation, which is just a huge mental toll and anxiety inducer. So it's... I just wanted to like point that out, that the refs are going through. I mean, this season is a grind, a particular grind for everyone, well, and that includes referees. And if we see some lacking in their performance on occasion, then that's a pretty good explanation for it, in my opinion.
100%. And I actually hope that Adam Silver makes that point when he talks at All-Star Weekend. You know, like, I think that it's self-evident that the referee performance has been a little bit down this year. You know, I'm not going to say it's an absolute disaster, but I've noticed there's been a lot of complaints like you're describing. I do think that's fueled by the players dealing with some of these same travel issues. But I do also think that, you know, some of these calls are just wacky, man. You know, it's just like, what is happening? And so, you know, as a leader, I think you got to step up for your people and say, hey, look, we're asking an awful lot from a lot of people. There's been so many sacrifices to make this season go. The referees are in the mix. Everybody back off the poor stripes. They're doing their best. I think that's probably the best way to handle it. And then, you know, send Utah a gigantic invoice for those post-game comments. speaking of the road, we got a question here from Stavros. He writes in, what did you guys make of your old mate Rob Mahoney's NBA vet room service article on The Ringer? Now, Michael, I don't know if you got a chance to read this one. I really enjoyed it, again, because it inspired kind of memories, not only of, you know, back before the pandemic when you kind of travel and you're going through those routines, but also of the bubble where I had a room service menu. And as a vegetarian, there was only about three things I could eat. And so, you know, every single night after games, I'm just cycling through those three different options. And surprise, surprise, none of them were particularly healthy. And I did wind up putting on some weight in the bubble. So everyone knows this room service dilemma. Rob broke it down brilliantly with the help of some veterans. Did you have any favorite aspects?
I mean, I got very hungry, I think, when I was scrolling through the menu, for sure. It made me miss going to restaurants. I haven't been to a restaurant in like a year. I love restaurants. I love the ambiance. I love the food. I love, you know, trying new things. And that hasn't really been, my wife and I, we do takeout. We try to do it at least once a weekend, and it's just not the same. Like, the food sometimes is soggy. Now it's super cold in New York, so going to pick it up is a bummer. It's very expensive, which, you know, we're happy to support the local restaurants and eateries, but it's pretty expensive when we want delivery.
Yeah, here's a hot take. Restaurants aren't great. Overrated. Completely overrated. Waiting in line for anything is rough. Just the whole, going through the whole process of what are you going to have to eat and all the pomp and circumstance around, what would you like for your main course? All those conversations.
This take.
Just completely inefficient, unnecessary. You've got to sit around. Everybody's looking at you. You've got to look at the other people and pretend they're not there.
Dude,
overrated.
This, I'm like about to hang up on you right now. This is one of the worst takes I've ever heard in my entire life in any subject.
Okay, well, bring on the counters, Michael.
Do I need to? Food is great.
Food is the best part. The restaurant is all unnecessary. It's just a gimmick to get you to pay more for it. I think the takeout economy is absolutely fantastic. So glad that has become the new, center force of our society in food delivery. Mm-hmm. Grocery stores also terrible, not as bad. Well, grocery stores might be worse than restaurants. I'd have to think about that. It really comes down to the wait time.
Oh
for
my!
Me.
Grocery stores are obviously worse than restaurants. Stop right now. I mean, I don't even know what the controversy here is, but can I just point out one particular item on Rob's menu here that he included that really just one of my all-time favorite foods, and it almost brought a tear to my eye that I haven't been able to eat it out in front of other people in a very long time.
Please.
And that is the jumbo shrimp cocktail.
Oh.
And this is served with, first of all, 7 pieces of shrimp in shrimp cocktail is a lot. And this is served with a, quote, spicy cocktail sauce, which I don't know if that's different from, you know, your regular horseradish, but that really caught my eye, and I wouldn't be a huge fan of paying $19 for that as an appetizer, but that seemed like a tasty one, and overall, like, the whole article is just incredible, and I suggest anyone go read it.
No, it had some pretty interesting quotes. I did like the Wizards, like, director of health, kind of just, like, expressing her opposition to how much stuff gets thrown into salads, like bacon and like extra salad dressing and all this stuff. And at one point, I think he or she was like, well, you might as well just have a burger if you're going to eat that. And it's like, wow, I never thought I would hear that from like somebody who was in charge of an NBA player's diet. Maybe just have a healthier salad. Maybe try that instead of going straight to a burger. Who knows? Great article by Rob. Obviously, he used to co-host on this show for a brief period. Missed that guy, and I was glad to see everyone reading it. If you haven't read it, free plug, go check it out on The Ringer. All right, a couple quick rapid-fire questions here before we get into an All-Star Night preview. Michael, give me 3 teams, coaches, players, figures within the NBA who need the All-Star break more than anybody else. Who you got?
Okay. In trying to answer this question, I had just like one name repeatedly just flashing in my head, and that's LeBron James.
Oh.
By far. There's really nothing. Like, I don't even know who is in second here. The Lakers are 3-6 since Anthony Davis went down with that Achilles injury. LeBron played 43 minutes in a 3-point loss against the Wizards last week. Like, it is, it's not great. It's not been a great stretch for him, for the Lakers. He sat out last night's loss against the Sacramento Kings, or 2 days ago, I can't even remember when that game was, but didn't play. And
I thought that was smart. Yeah, I mean, they gave him the extra days because they're trying to make up for him having to go to Atlanta. I thought that was kind of a nice workaround for them, didn't you?
100%. I mean, we'd had a conversation about LeBron's load. It feels like a month ago, but yeah, I think that there's just a great need to monitor his minutes, to not have him average more than he did last season. I mean, the 43 minutes against the Washington Wizards is just like, it's an astronomical number. I know that he knows his body better than anyone. He's not concerned about any of this, but all it takes is one preventable injury, like a strained muscle, a sprained ankle, anything to keep him out and to affect LA and either in the regular season standings or even as we get down into the playoffs, where if he has this this accumulated minutes load on his body, a lot of wear and tear, that could impact his performance, impact his ability to peak when he needs to. So I just think that, like, LeBron needs the rest more than anybody, like, by far. Do you agree with me? Was that the first name that kind of popped into your head?
Well, it's a good answer, but you're wrong, unfortunately, Michael. He can rank number two. I've got somebody who needs the All-Star break more than LeBron.
Oh.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Chris Finch. This guy, he might just want the season to end here. I don't know if you watch any part of the Timberwolves' loss to the Charlotte Hornets.
Of course. Just to
kind of set the stage, I mean, Ricky Rubio has been issuing increasingly dire statements here over the last week about how the Timberwolves are going the wrong direction. You know, everything's horrible after every single loss. I mean, just really getting dark, dark, dark. Ricky Rubio is in full frown, smile, upside down mode right now. I mean, it's not good. And they're trying to, like, push these buttons, get each other excited. You know, even just from their pregame warm-ups, Michael, I mean, it's the most half-hearted dancing I've ever seen. I mean, credit to Josh Okogie for trying. But these guys are just, like, bouncing up and down. I mean, they could not care less. Like, the body language is just absolutely awful from this group. It just pours through the television. And then in the games, like, Karl Anthony Towns is just flipping the ball around with these underhanded cross-court passes constantly. Like, it's just as if, you know, he's just sort of going through the motions. And certainly I feel for him. It's a very, very tough situation for him to be in this season. But just their entire team demeanor just falling apart completely in the second half against the Charlotte Hornets for their ninth straight loss. I mean, obviously, Chris Finch can use the break probably to learn his players' names and kind of understand, like, who's in this group, because he just got dropped into it midseason. They need to just, you know, they need to detach, come back fresh, and hope that the second half looks a little bit better than this first half, because they just absolutely were wheezing to the finish line here for the first half.
No, that's a really good call. Minnesota is just, it's a total mess right now. And yeah, you feel for them. I think, you know,
Michael, you're going to have to try a little harder with the expression of compassion. I mean, it didn't really seem genuine. I mean, try again.
I'm sorry. I do like, though, Josh Okogie, and I'm really glad that you shouted him out, because he just seems like a really fun teammate, and like, nothing can get that guy down. And he's not the greatest player, I would say. He's not having the greatest season, but when he's on the court, he just plays like it's his last possession every single time.
Oh, for sure.
And so,
no, he plays like he won the lottery. I mean, that's his whole thing, is like, I'm not sure, maybe he never expected to make the NBA, but his entire attitude is like, wow, I'm here, I'm going to do it, you know? And you do need guys like that in those kinds of situations. Maybe they can find five more of him during All-Star weekend, and they're going to be just fine. Who else do you got on your list here real quick?
Five more Josh Okogies. Not great for your basketball team. But anyway, my next person, Steven Silas.
There you go. You know, now we're talking, Michael.
Yeah. You know, this team has not won a basketball game since Christian Wood sprained his ankle. It feels like 6 years ago. I remember watching that game against the Grizzlies. I thought it was a lot worse. I mean, to hear that it was just a sprained ankle, I was kind of surprised. But yeah, he has not played. And so that's 13 straight losses for the Houston Rockets. And they just, I mean, every time I watch a Rockets game and the camera pans to Silas on the sideline, you just see the top of his head because his head is in his hands. It's just like, it's kind of like, I've seen it like four or five times, and I don't blame him, because if I was the coach of that team too, going through such a nightmarish season from the very beginning up until right now with all the injuries that they've had, with the Harden saga. I mean, this guy waits so long for his break to be a full-time head coach, and I can't think of a worse situation for him, and it's probably going to get a little bit worse because, you know, PJ Tucker's name is in trade rumors, and not that PJ Tucker's having the greatest season ever, but that's someone who is kind of an extension of a head coach on a basketball court, particularly on the defensive end.
Well, so, and that's the link to anything you had with your culture too, right? Like anything that kind of predated when Steven Silas is there. So once you trade PJ Tucker, now it's just like everything starts fresh. It's all these new guys. It's Wood, it's Wall, it's Oladipo, and now you plunge forward, and that can kind of be scary. At the same time, maybe they would just prefer that, you know? I mean, I think that they would miss PJ Tucker, but not that much on the basketball court. And I do wonder, you know, sometimes ripping the Band-Aid off is the best solution for them. It's been awful painful. I mean, James Harden just absolutely destroying them in that comeback game. He even got some cheers, Michael. I was a little bit surprised to hear that. Obviously, some boos mixed in as well. That's a tough way to kind of head into the All-Star break if you're the Rockets. You know, it's a real licking your wounds moment after having Harden walk out on you and then just stomp all over you in the comeback game. That's rough.
Like, I thought that it was one of those games. Do you remember when LeBron went back to Cleveland for the first time?
I did. Heat? Who could forget?
Like, that game was, I have not looked this up. I'm going straight off memory, and that game was like 10 years ago, but I want to say it was super competitive.
The Cavaliers were keeping it interesting, yeah, and I think ultimately he took over. I just remember it was really, like, people were worried there was going to be violence, you know, from the fans.
Batteries, yeah. But I just remember, like, that Cavs team being, like, upset and taking it personally. I think Mo Williams was still there, if I want to. I could be, like, totally, I'm going straight off memory, I'm sorry. But that Rockets team didn't. It wasn't rekindling those memories that I have of the Cavs kind of like wanting to show the player who left that, hey, this is what you did leave, and we're actually pretty good. And it just, you know, not having Christian Wood, I think that there is definitely a correlation there in just how the team has performed. And they've been forced to play super small lineups that just aren't good.
Take it slow with his return, Michael. Just milk this thing. That's what I would do. Get yourself in position for a new franchise player. That's how I would play this if I was the Houston Rockets. All right, real quick, snap take, top three MVP, who you got after the first half of the NBA season?
So you're going to be angry with me, but I have a tie for first place.
Michael.
And then I have...
God.
I'm sorry.
You've got to be kidding me.
I couldn't do it.
You've got to be kidding me.
You're gonna love my number three guy.
Okay.
But my tie for first, and I'm sorry, but it just has to be this way. It's Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. I can't separate these two. I've tried very hard. They're both so good. I can't do it. What are your thoughts? Am I overthinking this? Is it clear to you that one is better than the other or more valuable to their team than the other? Because
no, this is worse than the restaurant's take. I mean, this is terrible.
Oh my goodness.
No, like, come on, pick a side, Michael. You can't just sit on the fence. I'm going to still take Jokic because of games played and overall impact. I think he's been the best player in the league. I will take Embiid 2. I'm flirting pretty hard with Harden at 3. I'll stick with LeBron at 3 for now.
So I did the two-way tie because I wanted Dame on my list because he hit a ridiculous shot last night, and it kind of reminded me that he's incredible, even though Portland kind of was in a little bit of a slump before that win against the Warriors. But the fact that he's had so many teammates, key teammates, go down for such a long stretch of the season, and Portland is still extremely good in terms of just like not looking like the Houston Rockets. Like, shout out to Dame. I just had to include him. And I'm having Harden here. I'm having James Harden. Number three, I guess, or I guess number
finally,
four.
Finally, you show him some respect, Michael. It's about time. A real overcorrection from you, but I appreciate it.
He's just been so ridiculously consistent, and I don't really know what there is to say. The numbers are, they speak for themselves. He's never been a guy who, can get those triple doubles either. And I personally don't care about triple doubles, but I thought it's been interesting to see him basically average one over the past 3 weeks. A 29-point triple double for three straight weeks is pretty good on a team that just is not losing basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. As soon as KD's back, I think that will become even more obvious. I think they're going to end the season as the number one seed in the East. They're absolutely monstrous right now. He's getting great contributions from everybody around him. Joe Harris, Bruce Brown, the list goes on. He's elevating his teammates. He absolutely deserves to be in this mix. It's going to be really, really fascinating to see how long is the hang-up period, right? Because guys like you wouldn't even put him on your all-star starters list. KD didn't finish in the top seven MVP in the 3 years after he goes to Golden State. LeBron gets docked, and he finishes third in the MVP in 2011 behind Derrick Rose and Dwight Howard. There's usually a penalty period for these kinds of ugly breakups and exits when it comes to MVP voting. Will that apply to Harden, or will people just sort of, you know, decide, hey, you know what? Society moves faster now. Players move faster. December was months and months ago before we even had the vaccine. Who cares? Let's not get hung up on it. I feel like there's going to be pettiness from the voting block, and they will not reward him. That's my prediction. What do you think?
Well, real quick, like the big difference, and you know this, between LeBron and KD and Harden is that LeBron and KD waited until free agency and then chose new teams, which is perfectly fine thing to do.
Right. So
Harden trashed his teammates at a press conference when he knew he was trying to push himself out the door. Like,
no, for sure. That's why I think there's going to be even more resentment and backlash from voters in that situation. Wouldn't you think? Or not? Maybe we've just evolved and anything goes right now. It doesn't really matter what a player does on his way out of town. That could also be proven true, too, just because we've seen way more people move by 2021 than we had seen back in 2011.
I think the winning matters for sure. I think the fact that KD has only played 19 games and they're still winning without him really matters. And I think if you watch the Nets play basketball on offense, defenses are treating Harden as they did when he was in Houston, where, you know, he's crossing half court and they're sending two at him, even though Kyrie Irving is one of the other players who's likely going to get going to feast on a 4-on-3 advantage. So the fact that opposing coaches, and I was, you know, there was a game last week against the Spurs where the Nets won in overtime, and you know they're doubling Harden at half court, and Kyrie Irving hits a corner three in overtime to basically seal the deal, and he did a little Jordan shrug, Kyrie did, after he hit the shot, how could you leave me this open? And it's well, James Harden is just that good. James Harden is breaking our brains. That's how incredible he still is on offense. So it's undeniable. He's just an incredible basketball player.
No, I know. And it's crazy you denied him a starting spot on your roster. I'm never going to forgive
you. Stand by it.
Never going to forgive you for that one. Michael, real quick before we do this All-Star preview, last question I've got. What did you make of the Lloyd Pierce firing? It happened shortly after we taped our episode earlier this week. I think a lot of people were upset about it, feeling like, you know, he's an amazing communicator, feeling like he's a rising young head coach, feeling like all the injuries around him explained maybe some of the Hawks' slow start, and maybe he didn't get a fair shake. There were some reports, you know, kind of in the aftermath that there was some tension there between Lloyd Pierce and some key players, including Trae Young. Where do you come down on this in terms of was it a justified firing, and why did they do it now?
I was not shocked that he was fired. I wasn't shocked, but I was surprised, if that makes any sense. To can Lloyd Pierce after 2.5 years when there's been so many injuries, you know, DeAndre Hunter, who had been playing so well, goes down. Bogdanović has gone down. Chris Dunn has not played any games this season. Gallo missed the first month of the year. And for this team to be one back of the play-in and a game and a half back of the sixth seed is like, I just don't understand why he got booted now. I understand the interpersonal dynamics there that were a little frosty between him and Trey and John Collins and Cam Reddish all reportedly. But like at the same time, I don't know, like it felt there was like a Lloyd Pierce did an interview with The Athletic like very recently before he was fired where it just felt like a premonition, you know, him saying that there's going to be a day when Travis Schlenk fires me.
Yeah, and it's Tuesday.
He could see the writing on the wall. Yeah, exactly. He could see the writing on the wall. And, you know, this goes back to, I think, the Clint Capela trade, honestly, last year, where it was clear they were going to accelerate the timeline here in a way that might be unfair to a head coach who just took over a team that was clearly rebuilding. And the expectations were super high. He contributed to those high expectations by saying that it was basically a playoff or bust season. But
not really, though. That's not that high of a bar. I know people were nitpicking him on that. Who cares? Making the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, we're supposed to be impressed by that.
You know, no, I agree.
He could be an under 500 team and make the playoffs some years. So I don't feel like he was heaping too much pressure on his team there. But sorry, continue.
No, I mean, I agree with you. But apparently, you know, the ownership group in Atlanta was trying to walk that back. The GM was trying to walk that back. I don't know. I think that it's really difficult to know if Lloyd Pierce is a good head coach or a bad head coach based on what we've seen. Based on the injuries, the sample size, all the weird stuff that he had to go through. I mean, chalk up 2020 for what it was. Like, they didn't, you know, the season was cut short and he was on the outside looking in of the bubble. John Collins, the second best player last year, misses the first 25 games because he fails a drug test. Like, I don't, it's like, come on. I don't know. Like, I guess I just don't understand the timing either. Like, to do it right now before the All-Star break. I know that Bogdanović is supposedly about to come back.
Here's my thoughts. Not a coincidence. He absolutely got a raw deal. There's no question. You're seeing the reporting about Trae Young and, you know, what's his relationship like with Lloyd Pierce. Look, if that's not rock solid, I mean, that you're putting yourself in a tough spot as a coach, especially when that guy's been kind of deemed to be the franchise player and everything's kind of being built around him. I think also a lot of the timing part comes back to they spent a lot of money during the offseason. They expected to have instant results. A lot of those moves have kind of blown up in their face or not worked out at all. And some of them in pretty predictable fashion. The Rondo move I never thought would work out. Gallinari was just a classic candidate for a regression season. That's kind of been the case. You've pointed out weeks ago the complications with not taking care of John Collins, but paying Gallinari. And so, you know, what does that say about their future? And what does it say about their present in terms of how they balance all these guys? You've got Collins playing for a contract this year, trying to strike an offensive balance with Trae Young. Ultimately, that's the coach's job to kind of help those guys work through it. It never really felt like they were all on the same page there. And the fascinating report from The Athletic saying that Lloyd Pierce was sharing his own frustration with Trae Young's foul hunting on a league-wide call. You basically never hear that. And certainly that would be a situation, another point of tension potentially between those guys. So I don't think we should overlook that. And I think that they had this moment a couple weeks ago when Lloyd Pierce was away from the team where they had to have Nate McMillan stand in as coach. And you're seeing this week as well, you know, a couple of bounce back wins from the Hawks with Nate McMillan as coach. I just think that to a certain degree, as incredible of a communicator as Lloyd Pierce is with the media, with the general public, with other NBA figures, and you hear, you know, lots of people bending over backwards to, you know, show their support here over the past week. It seems to me like the communication internally didn't match that external communication, especially with his key players. That was my read on why you do it now. You just try to get a little bit of a reverse of momentum heading into the break and heading into the second half, and you kind of hope things turn around. We'll see if it works out for them. They did get a nice late win, eking it out against the Orlando Magic, who just completely collapsed down the stretch of that game. So maybe that's a little positive momentum for Atlanta heading into the break. They should be better than their record, by the way, and they should be a playoff team. They've got enough talent, especially when they're healthy, to be a playoff team. If Trae Young is who all of his supporters said he was last year, he will bring that team into the playoffs. That's my opinion. All right, Michael, let's do a quick All-Star Weekend preview. I'm going to give you the field for these different events, and I need your picks, and then I'm going to ask you for your All-Star Game MVP, and you're going to see the future and try to be an oracle. How's that sound?
Perfect.
All right, skills challenge. Luka Doncic, Chris Paul, Julius Randle, Domantas Sabonis, Nikola Vucevic, and Robert Covington. Got to say, how are we feeling about the skills challenge field? C-?
I mean, you know, we've talked about the skills challenge. I could not care less about the skills challenge. This is also just a very strange.
This is the perfect episode here for you. We've got restaurants that anger you. We've got officiating conversations that you don't like. And we've got the skills challenge with your already out on. So grit your teeth, Michael. Come on. Give me a real solid skills challenge breakdown. No, I'm right there with you. This is a tough event. And I think it's made worse by having some really random people in it. But what you got?
Why can you explain to me why Robert Covington is here? Like
he's the only he's an HBCU graduate, I believe, who's in the NBA. Okay. I think that's sort of how they got him in there, but super random because the other five guys are all stars.
Okay, that's a very good point by you. I should know that.
Credit to Mark Spears of the Undefeated on that one. I saw his tweet. Otherwise, I would have been completely baffled.
Okay, yeah. I knew he went to an HBCU, and I know that they're donating money to HBCUs, and so, okay, that makes sense. Otherwise, yeah, this is obviously just a ridiculous field. I'm going to be rooting for Julius Randle because he seems like the biggest what is going on here. I can't even imagine him. I think he's a really good playmaker and everything, but he's just, when I think about his game, there's just a wildness to it. And I think it could get a little awkward when we got to do the bounce passes through the tire into the net, you know, like that might take 45 minutes. We'll see. So I'm going to be rooting for him or at least watching him closely and very excited for that part. But like if Chris Paul doesn't win this, then I don't know. Chris Paul should win
this. Is it possible the whole All-Star Weekend was designed by Chris Paul and the Players Union solely so that Chris Paul could win the Skills Challenge? Is it, you know, he's a notorious competitor. Is this whole thing just a build up to him running everybody else off the court? Definitely possible. I'm going to take Luka, cop out pick. Sorry, but you know, not as bad as having two MVPs, so I'm okay with it. 3-point contest field, Michael. We've got Devin Booker, Jaylen Brown, Stephen Curry, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum. So you got both of your Celtics in here, plus Steph Curry. Who do you think is going to win this one?
Peyton Pritchard was snubbed, I just want to say. And also, no LeBron. Like, why couldn't LeBron be in this? We talked about this before, and we were trying to pick or predict who would be here. I just wanted to see LeBron win the 3-point contest. That would have been fun.
Yeah, I'd like to see the face of the person who tries to invite LeBron to any of these events after his huge rant about why are we having an All-Star game. That'd be phenomenal. I'm sure that would go great.
Yeah, you're not inviting LeBron over a Zoom call. You are 100% sending a text message and then throwing your phone out the window. I'm going with Steph Curry.
Controversial pick. What are you thinking? Why, Michael?
I think he might have a future as a 3-point specialist in the NBA. I mean, this is his 7th try in this contest. He's won it once before, which in looking that up, I was a little bit surprised that he's participated so many times. But he's just, you know, he's Steph. He's having one of the greatest shooting seasons of all time. He leads the NBA in 3-point attempts and 3-point makes. This is not, you know, triple teamed with a hand in his face. He doesn't have to do step backs to create space. And, you know, I'm going to throw a little bit of sugar on this prediction and say that in addition to picking Steph, you know, I looked it up. The all-time streak for makes in this contest in a row is 19 shots. Ooh. I think Steph is going to break that record.
Now we're talking. Good prediction, Michael. That's too bad, though, because he's losing to Zach LaVine. That's my pick. Zach LaVine's coming in hot. He wants to be a guy who's won the dunk contest and the 3-point contest. You know, he's obviously incredibly excited to be there in Atlanta. He's made that very clear over the last week or two, really the last year and a half of campaigning. And I just think he's going to have the best energy. You know, I think if energy is going to be a real factor in this All-Star weekend. I'm concerned about the buy-in, you know, just to kind of across the board. But one guy I'm not concerned about being bought in is Zach LaVine. I think he's going to go out there. He can get hot. We've seen it this season for sure. Mm-hmm. They've got those deep three-pointers. I think, you know, he can somewhat handle that. I've got Zach LaVine. I'm kind of trying to, you know, make amends for, you know, the last month of Zach LaVine takes by picking him here in this challenge. I'm not sure it's going to work, but that's my take.
I'm honestly stunned that you pick Zach LaVine knowing your relationship with him.
Well, this is a three-point contest, not a playoff game. Dunk contests. We've got Obi Toppin, New York Knicks, Anfernee Simons, Portland Trail Blazers, Cassius Stanley, well, technically Indiana Pacers, also some G League worked in there. How are we feeling about the field for the dunk contest, Michael? Because you and I both love the dunk contest. You know, earlier you were expressing all sorts of frustration about various other things, but you do love the dunk contest. Do you love this dunk contest field, though?
There would be something wrong with me if I loved this dunk contest field, I feel like. I feel like you would need to check on me and so, like, commit me somewhere, because this is like I was so disappointed when I saw these names, and I don't want to be you know, making fun of these guys. I really appreciate the fact that they are participating and they took that call, and I'm sure that there was a long list of names asked who declined the invitation, and I know Zion was asked, Jaylen Brown was asked. I didn't see anybody else definitively, but I'm sure there were other names. They all declined. So thank you for your service to these three, but I can't get pumped about it. I'm gonna watch it. You know, the fact that there are only three names, I think, is obviously because that this contest is supposed to take place during halftime of the actual game, the All-Star game. But I mean, it would have been cool if, you know, a name that people know who aren't like League Pass subscribers was participating. That would be fun, but it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. Well, look, first of all, it's the smallest field ever. There's never been a three-man field. So that's one complication. Complication number two, they're doing it at halftime, which I'm sure, you know, if you're an All-Star and they're like, you want me to go out and be the halftime show, like, that's practically insulting, right? So for guys like LaVine or Zion Williamson, I'm completely okay with them passing, because at that point, it's like, what do you want me to do? Like, go out there and, you know, juggle hula hoops and, like, get up on a unicycle? Like, come on. What are we even talking about?
So that is exactly what I want.
Well, good luck. You could be the person pitching those guys, right? Okay. I think that's a big hang up. And then also the lack of crowd is just tough, you know? So I actually give the three guys who are doing it extra credit for doing it. Not only do they have to go through all the crazy protocols and set themselves up for mocking, right? Because there's a real potential for everybody to be like, this is the worst dunk contest ever. And there's a real potential, frankly, for this to be the worst dunk contest ever. I mean, there's been some pretty bad ones, but these circumstances are really, really rough. And the one saving grace is they got amazing judges. Dominique, Spud Webb, you know, Jason Richardson, Josh Smith. Like, they did very well on the judges, so kudos there. But, I mean, the circumstances are just all wrong, so my expectations are very, very low. At the same time, these three guys can really dunk. I mean, Obi Toppin can dunk. He's got, I looked at some, you know, highlight clips on YouTube. He's going between his legs around the bag, you know, self alley-oops off the glass. Like, he's got a pretty nice package. I think he gets compared to Amari Stoudemire, but he's actually a little bit even more creative with the basketball when it comes to dunking than Amari was, who kind of had to go for the gimmicks with, like, the header from Steve Nash and all that, right? Anfernee Simons, he's actually listed much taller than I thought at 6'3". He's just so skinny, but when he just hurdles through the air, he goes flying like a little guy, like you know, like a Spud Webb or like a Nate Robinson. It's pretty fun to watch, and he gets off the hardwood quick. So I think from that standpoint, he should be pretty entertaining as well. He's got some real balance. It sounds like from The Athletic, they said possibly Damian Lillard would help him out as a teammate. Which, you know, that at least adds a little bit of star power to the mix. And then Cassius Stanley, I mean, he's only known as a dunker. He's been known as a dunker since he was like 16 or 17 in Southern California high school circles. Came in, set the vertical leap record at Duke, breaking Zion's record. So you've got three guys who can legitimately jump, who can do some pretty cool things in the air. I found a video of Anthony Simons just jumping and having his head graze the rim for no reason. That was kind of cool. What if he just didn't dunk, Michael? What if he just like went up there, had his head hit the rim, and then just called it good? That would be innovative for the dunk contest. I think they're just trying to get this thing over as quickly as possible. What do you think?
I mean, I agree with you, but I do, yeah, I do want to say that, you know, passing up the break and being able to spend time with your families to participate in this, like, you do deserve some applause there. So thank you to these three.
I hope they get some marketing deals out of it too, right? I mean, hopefully they're coming back home and they've got, you know, some little like logos and stickers they can, you know, put on their shoulders maybe while they're dunking, or you know, they get something out of this, right?
Well, yeah, and this is the most that anyone will ever watch them do anything in their life. It's like performing at the Super Bowl halftime show as a musician. But, yeah, I watched Cassius Stanley. I was very unfamiliar with him before. Honestly, even though I cover the NBA for a living, I'm just going to admit that I didn't even know what he looked like before. Before I saw his name in this contest. And so I watched a couple dunks on YouTube, and like he threw down a few like one-handed just like punches off lobs at Duke that were very, very impressive. So I don't know how that's going to work in the contest, if they can kind of figure out a way to, I'm sure that, you know, I don't even know. I'm not even going to speculate on what these guys are going to try to do, but I'm going to watch regardless because I am a dunk contest junkie. I know you are too. I just, you know, I wish and I hope that Zion participates someday soon.
All I know is I'm trusting Cassius Stanley to take this thing home. I think he was kind of one of these guys who was born to do it. Maybe in a deep field, he would struggle a little bit more, but there's some kind of Derrick Jones Jr. wins the thing vibes to him where, you know, this is kind of, you know, Jeremy Evans type vibes where like this is kind of what his mission on earth was to do. You know, and I think the door is wide open. Are you going to pick your guy Simons?
I think I am going to pick Simons. And, you know, I think one possibility that would really bring it home for me is if somebody, maybe him, maybe someone else, actually dunked over a person getting the vaccine. Oh, that would be very cool.
So you're going to do a full tie-in, you know? Not only is this going to be for COVID relief, right? This event that's spawning all these...
Spread awareness. Yeah.
All these parties around Atlanta, which are trying to kind of go under the radar a little bit. But you're going to put it center stage and have millions of people watch somebody get the vaccine. Look, awareness is really important. The numbers are incredible right now in terms of how many vaccinations are getting done. It's been under-discussed on this show for sure, Michael. We finally got some good news in terms of the overall national spread of COVID going down here over the last couple of weeks and of vaccinations going way up. Let's hope that momentum continues. And let's hope that the NBA does, you know, really get serious about not only encouraging people to get vaccinated, but about trying to be on the right side of this health story throughout All-Star Weekend, because it is a monster stage with lots of people watching. Last question of the show, Michael. All-Star Game MVP, who you got?
So this is a little bit tied to our last episode where we had our draft, and I was very upset because I picked Chris Paul a little early, and they did not get Zion. So if Zion is on Chris Paul's team, then I think Zion will be the MVP of the All-Star Game. If Zion is not on Chris Paul's team, I'm picking Chris Paul. And I might just flat out just pick Chris Paul because he is a iconic All-Star performer. He tries harder than everybody else. He takes it super seriously. And I don't know if you knew this, but he is 15 assists short of Magic Johnson's all-time All-Star lead.
Wow, that's category. A deep pull. So he's got to get 16 because he doesn't know if he's coming back next year. So he's got to go out with a bang, right, is what you're saying?
Yes, and he knows, I guarantee you, he knows that he is 15 down for Magic Johnson. Like, that's etched in his brain. So I expect him to go all out. And I remember I wrote a story about him after last year's All-Star performance. And, you know, he talked about at length like, he takes this seriously. He yells at his teammates when they're not trying on defense, like, legitimately. So, which I'm sure is really fun during an All-Star game. But yeah, no, he's a joy to watch. He makes the game fun for everybody. He is a brilliant genius on a basketball court, and I hope he wins MVP.
It's an interesting take. The Zion thing had me thinking because I'm convinced the older players are going to just really not care this time around. And so I do think that the door is open for a younger guy to steal it. I was thinking about Zion, but I also wonder, has he quite cracked the code in terms of the respect factor from his teammates? Will he wind up getting fewer minutes from Quinn Snyder in deference to some of the other more established guys? I just think that could be problematic for him. My bet's going to be Luka. I think it's going to be Luka coming through, bombing. He gets the starting spot, you know, trying to show that he earned it. He's in a really nice groove right now. When LeBron and Kawhi and whoever else just decide, we're good, Luka's going to have the ball in his hands a ton. I think he's going to be my pick. He can remind the Atlanta crowds what they could have gotten had Travis Schlenk not traded him for Trae Young. Man. It's going to all come full circle, and it'll be great.
That's not going to happen. I just want to quickly go back to me picking Kawhi in our last episode with my first pick, and you really poo-pooing that decision. Kawhi was the MVP of last year's game. I didn't even know that. I completely forgot before I made that decision. And I don't think we broached it when we talked. So I just wanted to mention that here. But Luka's not going to win because he's just, like you talk about, he just reminds me of Harden in All-Star performances. It's just his game does not suit it.
I did forget that about Kawhi Leonard. Nice pull. I'm not sure that justifies what was an atrocious draft. It seems like you've spent an awful lot of time here, Michael, apologizing for some of your picks here and regretting it, and that's completely understandable. Mm-hmm. Look, you've got Chris Paul. I've got Luka Doncic. We'll tune in on Sunday night, and we'll see how it all shakes out. I'm looking forward to it. Look, it's better than nothing. I think that's probably the slogan for All-Star Weekend at this point, and we'll see what they can come up with. I'm sure that the TV presentation aspect of it will be rock solid because they've had some time to prepare for it, and because you're going to have an awful lot of big personalities to work with as well, so that's always good. All right, Michael, they can find us on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you find our page, scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. It's just that easy to help us spread the word. Michael's on Instagram and Twitter, at Michael V as in Victor Pina. I'm on Instagram, at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter, at Ben Golliver. Guys, please email us. Let us know what you think of the All-Star Weekend after you watch it. OpenFloorMail@gmail.com. OpenFloorMail@gmail.com. All right, Michael, until next week. I will talk to you.
Talk soon, Ben.